Good evening and welcome along to Midweek Motorsport. I'm John Heindorf and live in London is Tim Gray. Good evening, Tim.
I'm not in London.
Where are you?
I'm in Norwich.
Why are you in Norwich?
They sent me here for some bizarre reason, which I'm sure will become clear later.
Okay. So Wellingborough and Norwich this week then?
Yes.
Okay.
Isn't this good?
You could have told me that beforehand.
I just
pick up the phone when you pick up the line when you answer me.
I know.
On a packed programme tonight, Tim, we have...
We'll be investigating a brand new championship.
Oh, right. Very interesting.
Which will be starting in 2008. We'll be catching up with the latest news.
Of course.
With Nick Damon and Declan Brennan covering Europe and America respectively.
If you're in Norwich, does that mean we've got the quiz of the week? Clearly not.
Call my huff, we'll be back.
You just left me hanging there on purpose, didn't you? You rotten so-and-so. Here's me, old jet lag from coming back from St. Pete's, and you just left me there. There's not that much of a delay on the line between here and Norwich.
Not that far, is it?
No, not as the crow flies. Okay, then that's all on a packed programme tonight here on Midweek Motorsport. Your emails and suggestions for features and people to interview and comments on the weekend's action as well to studio@0157.org. We've had a lot of emails this week about Thomas Enger, and we're going to try and catch up with either Thomas or the team in this next 2 hours as well to find out just exactly how the Czech Republic driver is getting on after that very scary accident at St. Pete's on Saturday. That's all still to come on Midweek Motorsport, but next, a brand new motorsport series. It's here on Midweek Motorsport.
If it's on the track, it's on Glowcast Radio, Sky Channel 0157 and 0157.org.
It's Midweek Motorsport live from London. I'm John Heindorf, and joining us on the phone now, the Operations Director of Super League Formula, described as two great sports, one thrilling championship. Welcome to the programme, Robin Webb.
Yeah, it's my pleasure to be on the programme.
Yesterday was your launch out in Spain, a major new initiative that brings together two of the world's most popular sports, football and motor racing. Now, in fairness, Robin, this is not a new idea, is it?
No, it's been done before, and it was a good idea then, and it's a good idea now. We decided that we would try and put this together and do the job properly, and we think we've done just that.
What do you think you have got that the previous people who had this idea couldn't actually bring to the table? Because, as you say, I always thought it was a good idea. I'm a football fan, I'm a motor racing fan, I see the synergy, to use a marketing term, but the idea never really got off the ground very much the last time. What are you doing differently?
Well, I think it was a shame, and I think you'd have to speak to the previous owner, but I think at the end it simply ran out of finance, and the owner of that of the concept of the company, I think, just decided that maybe he hadn't got all the elements to put it in place.
Right. Now, you have already got a car, haven't you? Tell me a little bit about that.
We've got two cars. They've been designed by Panos Elan. That's the company that won the Champ Car deal recently, and they've mm-hmm. actually got their first race this weekend in Las Vegas on the street circuit. So they've done, and it's full of Brits over there, and they designed a car for us. This is actually a Mark II car, because halfway through the design process we decided to up the specification, and we've gone for a very serious racing car.
Yes, a V12 engine, 750 horsepower, single-seater, very much an up-to-date-looking car, very wide track, I noticed from the pictures, slick racing tyres. Looks like it's going to be a handful, Robin.
Well, yeah, I hope so, in a way, because this has got to be a test of man and machine, and let's not make it too easy for them. So they haven't got all the electronic gizmos, but they have got electronic paddle shift and things like that, but they haven't got launch control. And, yeah, we've gone to the 2 metres width, because we felt that modern Formula One cars, for example, now are beginning to look a little bit narrow and skinny and don't look too balanced. So we've got slick tyres, we've gone to 2 metres width, and we've gone for a fair amount of underbody aerodynamics. Don't want to bore you too much, but what that means is at least the cars will be able to follow each other closely, the sort of nose under the gearbox.
Where's the engine coming from, Robin?
The engine's been built by, it's actually the old Arrows company. When they went into liquidation, they were bought by a company called Maynard Technologies, an American company. And they actually retained all the personnel who built the Le Mans winning engines for the TWR cars. And they've got a massively skilled workforce there. And they won the contract in the end. They designed us the completely new bespoke V12 engine.
I'm interested. Which clubs are you aiming for? And are we going to get some British clubs, or is it all going to be European and worldwide clubs?
No, we have to get British clubs. And all I can say with regard to British clubs is watch this space. But we're talking to the most important ones.
So clearly Sunderland is the top of your list, then, as a Sunderland supporter.
Probably number one, possibly number two.
It's the right answer, Robin, which gets you some more airtime.
Southampton for somebody else, and for me, Aston Villa. So if we get those three clubs, we're all going to be happy, aren't we?
Now, in all seriousness, I have seen the car in colours of, I think, AC Milan, isn't it? That's the launch colours.
Yeah, what we're going to do is we started with a long time ago. We're getting the interest from the football clubs. We went to see them. We went to see their directors, and we got the letters of intent off them. We're now converting those letters of intent into full-blooded contracts, which are effectively license agreements.
Okay.
License agreements to use their image exclusively in a certain way. As we actually get the signatures, while those signatures are wet, we're going to announce it to you. So we don't want to fill everybody with incorrect information or incorrect expectation. We're going to announce them. And in fact, AC Milan did sign. Mr. Galliani signed the contract last week, and it was a great moment for us. And we've got PSV Eindhoven, we've got FC Porto, and we've got Olympiacos. So we've got champions from each of those countries at the moment.
Tell me, Robin, how is the series going to work? For example, who is going to own and run the cars? Because presumably the football clubs aren't set up to do that.
No, the football clubs don't really have... What they didn't want was any liabilities and any responsibilities, and they also didn't want to part with any money. They're net recipients. Sort of makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, okay, I like that too.
But it's our job to make a commercial enterprise out of this, and those brands are valuable, and they bring in the fan support. I mean, we're expecting sort of 50% of the new fans to have a look at this, as well as 50% of established motor racing fans.
And so the cars will be run centrally?
No. What we're going to do is we're using the traditional method. They're going to be run by teams.
Okay.
And those teams are, believe me, going to be fighting for these places. We're actually going to offer 10 race teams the opportunity to get involved in this championship, and there's some very serious prize money. We're starting with €1 million a weekend. So they can get very rich very quickly. And they're also stakeholders in the project. So, if you like, the net recipients of any revenues are ourselves, but of course we have to swallow all the costs. Mm-hmm. The race teams will have to swallow some of the costs of getting the cars to the events and looking after them. And the football clubs, who obviously just let us have their brands under licence.
If it's not a rude question, where's the money going to come from?
It's a straightforward commercial enterprise. The money comes primarily from sponsorships, i.e. other brands that want to be associated with the brands that we're running. And what we've done is we've teamed up with Havas Media Planning. And Havas Media Planning Group have done an awful lot of research for us on the actual return on investment based on the amount of exposure with an expectant TV audience, which is also very modestly calculated and done on real-time calculations. So it's incredibly well researched, and we're very lucky to have them as partners in this operation.
How will it work for a club? I'll take Sunderland again. It's clearly clearly your first choice of any of the English soon to be Premier club.
We've got too many red clubs, I think.
I know PSV red and white as well.
And Olympiacos as well.
Of course, red and white stripes, fantastic. Sunderland are sponsored by Reg Vardy at the moment.
Yep.
But obviously, as soon as they go into the Championship, we'll get a much bigger and better sponsor. And let's say we pull in Coca-Cola as the shirt sponsor. What happens, he said, hopefully, what happens then if the people who want to back the cars, the Sunderland coloured cars in your series, are... Pepsi Cola rather than Coca-Cola. How does that work, and how does competing sponsorship work?
Okay, what we do is, let's talk about the car sponsorship, because that's where we're focused, rather than event sponsorship, which is another issue altogether.
Mm-hmm.
On the car sponsors, which is where you're likely to get the clashing, for example, let's say Reg Vardy remain on the car.
Yep.
The first thing we have to do by contract is we give a four-week window of opportunity to incumbent sponsors within the football clubs.
Okay.
And that is primarily the shirt sponsor, let's say Reg Vardy,
yeah,
and let's say the kit supplier, which, for example, let's say Adidas. And we go to the sponsors, and maybe one or two other sponsors who have been associated with the club for many years, and we say, listen, guys, do you want to get involved in this? If they say no, the football club has two options. They can say, okay, well, look, we don't care, we're going to Reg Vardy, so we'll go down the road and give it to another motor supplier.
Sure.
Or they might say, no, we've got a great association with Reg Vardy, and we don't want to clash in that category. That option goes to the football club. So they can clearly have a say in that, and they also have a veto right over anything that clashes with, let's say, an Adidas or a Nike or whatever.
Yeah.
But in other matters... You get interesting situations throughout Europe because, for example, in Spain, you get football clubs who actually have other divisions. So they have handball, they have volleyball, they have cycling,
yes,
and whatever. So they're quite used to this concept. And what they do is they don't seem to mind having clashing sponsors.
As long as the money's coming in.
I think money sort of dictates everything. You're dead right.
No, that makes sense, and you know, I understand that, and I know that we do it slightly different here in the UK to being abroad. Now, where are we looking then? We've mentioned Europe. We've mentioned the UK. Further afield than that as well, because there are big
absolutely
football
yeah
marketplaces, particularly in the Far East at the moment, and of course in South America as well.
Well, in South America, we take Mexico, Argentina, and Brazil, and we probably take two clubs from Brazil. Because the TV stations over there say, listen, we want the top two, and you can guess who those might be. We go to Korea. You might be able to guess which one we're going for there. And then we've got China and Japan. They will immediately be on our list for the first season, although possibly Japan will come in the second year.
Okay. Now, how many races are you aiming for, and when do we expect them to start?
We're being really modest. We decided that we're going to have a launch year in 2008 with six races. We're going to start right at the end of the summer, which is a race in England on August the 31st. And we're going to follow with five more races fairly quickly in Europe. And that's going to be, if you like, a mini championship, which is going to be very heavily promoted.
Mm.
6 to 7 million euros of money going into the promotion of that, leading up to that first event. And then once we've established the championship and the brand in everybody's name, in everybody's minds, then we expand to 9 races, 12 races, 15, 17.
Right. Now, anyone who wants to do anything, particularly with single-seater Formula cars, clearly is going to be compared at some stage to Formula One, and therefore is going to have to deal with the FIA at some stage. How do we think that Bernie and FOM and Max Mosley at the FIA are going to... are they going to smile on this event? Or are they giving it their blessing?
Well, the politics of it, I don't know. All I can tell you is that in December 2005, we pushed through an application for an FIA sanction for a car that would withstand the 12 2005 FIA safety crash tests,
mm-hmm,
and with a 4.2-litre engine that we have decided on with Maynard. And it got approved, and we now have it. So it's been approved, and Bernie is one of the 23 people who sits
yes,
on
absolutely
that World Council. So he's seen it and approved it, I guess.
talking to Robin Webb, who's the operations director of Super League Formula, bringing football and motor racing together. I suppose the key point out of all of this, you can get the money, you can get the teams, you've clearly already got the car sorted and ready to go. Where are you going to race? Because there are only so many tracks around the world that can handle this type of machinery. Some of those will be Formula One tracks and may not, regardless of what anybody at the FIA says, may not want to put their FIA date in jeopardy.
Well, they've already done it. We've been to them. I mean, we've done all the work. And okay. There seems to be a change of attitude amongst the exclusivity of those locking out other races. They need revenue, like the world needs revenue. And the more they're paying for Formula One to host Formula One races, the more revenue that they need elsewhere. They just can't have their circuits sitting around. And
the one
thing they need is new fans. I mean, they have board meetings saying, how do we get new people interested in motorsport? And this is one of the very few opportunities that allows them to bring in a potentially big new fan base, and that's the motorsport fans. And we've done the research. Football fans.
The football fans, yeah.
And we've done the research, and it's 100% support. I mean, we had 21,000 hits on our website today. Sorry, 28,000 on our website today, which is just crazy. Day two. We seem to have the support.
I've followed this concept from its start because I interviewed the original people at the Autosport show way back when, and the application that I put in front of them was when, and I say this with clenched teeth, of course, coming from Sunderland, when Newcastle United had their sporting club, they sponsored a sports car, the Lister.
They did, the Lister, yeah.
At Le Mans. And we sold the Newcastle United Lister Storm football shirt type shirt at the Radio Le Mans shop. And Adidas were delighted because I can't remember how many they brought, but it was a few thousand, and they sold them out on Thursday afternoon. And it was very bizarre for me to stand in the pit lane and look out at a sea of black and white on the other side of Le Mans pit lane. It was very upsetting for me. But that example proves, does it not, Robin, that there is a crossover, and football supporters are tremendously loyal and tremendously evangelical, and they will follow anything that's got their club's colours on it.
It's true. I mean, we did focus group research with the top 10 European clubs in the five countries. And there were guys there who knew very, very little about motorsport. And in those focus groups, they were presented with models of the cars and then discussed it. And we did all this because we've invested so far in just research, €4.7 million. And at each stage, we've always said, listen, if this isn't a goer, we'll walk away. That's what you have to do in business if you're setting up something new. And at each stage, we've been massively encouraged. And I think, for me, when we did the launch at AC Milan and the players came over in all their gear and we had a black drape over the car and we pulled the drape back, and all the players, there was 21 from the squad, all in their kit, and they pulled the drape back, and there they were, matching the colours of the car perfectly. And they all clapped spontaneously, and it was a breathtaking moment for us. And at that moment, we really knew we'd got something here.
Well, let's just finish this off then with a few questions about how the series moves forward. Mm-hmm. What if you like, key performance indicators have you set yourself? How many teams do you need to sign up, and by when?
Well, we'll finish off the signings during the rest of this year,
right.
And once we've got 16, we're happy. We will actually get 20. The situation is we had 18 letters of intent signed, and we're currently in negotiations with 27, and we will not start with more than 20. So
right.
we're quite clear in our minds that supply exceeds the demand, or whichever one is higher. I would get confused with those. But we're comfortable with
higher,
that.
Yeah. Now, you said that you're going to have traditional teams running these, and presumably traditional drivers as well then. So this will be a professional driver formula that will attract up-and-coming drivers. So in that case, where do you see Super League Formula sitting? Is it at GP2 level? Is it at A1 GP level? Is it at Formula 3 level? Where does it sit?
Oh, it's way beyond those. The power of the car and the quality of the drivers. We don't have any restrictions on the drivers. The prize money means that the teams are going to get the best drivers. But just one thing came out of the research. When we started this about 2.5 years ago, everybody told us that you have to have branded name drivers. And we listened to that and we thought, yeah. When we did the research, and our research, our target audience is sort of more like 18 to 35. So we're trying to get rid of the older motor racing fans and bringing in new people. And they were very clear. They said, we want the next best kid on the block. Mm-hmm. They really didn't want any old branded names. It just came over time and time and time again. So what we're going to do is we're going to get the new young drivers who are on their way to wherever they're on their way to. But, for instance, the next new Brazilian karting champion can drive for any team. We don't have any restrictions on nationality.
No, understand that. However, there will be a parallel drawn between yourselves and A1GP. And in some respects, Robin, has A1GP made this concept slightly more palatable to investors and possibly now easier to explain than it would have been when it came around the first time?
I think what that has done is it has opened up people's minds to the fact that a new championship can hit the decks running. I think in terms of business concept and saleability, I think we have something very, very different. And,
yes, I agree with you.
I think putting your brand against the brand of, let's say, AC Milan or PSV Eindhoven is possibly a little bit stronger than I don't know, Lebanon or whatever.
And more international, bizarrely, because, you know, you could be an AC Milan fan. You don't have to be, you know, in the home country.
No.
We see from people like Manchester United, Liverpool, all of those big clubs around the world have international following in all the places that you're likely to want to go and race.
Absolutely. I mean, these top brands are known everywhere, and their supporters are. There's some research. Sport 5 did some research, and they call them motor racing football sympathisers. And it showed that brands like Manchester United are just massive. You know, 19 million around the world, or some figure like that. So yes,
well,
it's huge.
I've got to say, I thought, as I said right at the beginning of this, I thought when it was first mooted some years ago, it'll be 5 or 6 years ago now, that it was a reasonably good idea. I haven't been swayed from that idea. Robin Webb, who's the Operations Director of Super League Formula, thank you very much indeed for joining us tonight and explaining the whole concept, and we can only wish you the best of luck and hope we'll be speaking to you again very shortly with some more good news.
Thanks.
We know that when you listen to Globecast Radio via Sky, you need to be near your telly. Thousands of you do every week. But we know we're missing a trick. People that want to listen to us anywhere in the house, well, now you can. Thanks to the Sky Gnome. No, not a little red and green man with a silly pointy hat holding a fishing rod, but a rather natty little box in sophisticated blue or funky orange that's a portable wireless way of listening to Sky channels, all Sky channels, around the house. Although we, of course, know you'll only ever have it tuned to Globecast Radio. So now you can be in the dining room, the kitchen, the bathroom, the bedroom, garden, or the garage. Up to 30 metres away to use the remote, more if you just want to listen. Go to sky.com for full details of the Sky Gnome. Sound anywhere at home. Buy a gnome.
Every week we bring you all the motorsport news, wherever in the world.
Midweek Motorsport.
The international motorsport magazine on radio.
Globecast Radio.
So, as promised and as tradition dictates, here's Tim Gray with this week's motorsport headlines.
Thank you, John. And Kimi Raikkonen's hopes of following up his triumphant Ferrari debut with another win in Malaysia this weekend could be dented before qualifying has even started. The Finn Fierce's car's engine was damaged in the Australian season opener and could need replacing, which would incur a 10-place penalty on the starting grid for the second round of the Formula One season. He told the Ferrari website, "There is some concern."
Ooh.
Nick Damon, our F1 correspondent, joins us.
Hi, the wing and R-ing in the background.
In all fairness, I mean, you could have a car like a Machiavellian thing that they're trying to, you know, lull everyone to force security, but actually they did kind of mention it literally on the plane back from Melbourne. Towards the end of the Australian Grand Prix, Kimi Raikkonen had a small water leak, And that was causing some form of concern. Obviously, they have to use that engine for two races. It finishes the first one. So they have to use it in Malaysia. Malaysia, obviously, is the hardest circuit on engines as far as ambient conditions are concerned. So the one thing you don't want to have is an issue with the cooling system. Now, the problem they have is they're very limited in what they're allowed to do once the engines are effectively sealed in parc fermé conditions. Now, a water leak could be anything. I mean, you know, it could be a faulty seal, it could be a bad pipe connection, or it could be, obviously, rather more, you know, worrying, some sort of seepage from a cylinder head or something else. And they actually, strangely enough, they haven't even looked at it yet because the engines are obviously sealed and being looked after by the stewards, and so they won't get to see them until, I think, until Friday or Thursday, when they can then see what the problem is and then decide whether they need to replace it or not.
Right. So there may be a problem, but they won't know about it until they get to the track.
Well, no, I mean, exactly. I mean, obviously, it's not a major issue. They've got plenty of spare engine to put it in. And they obviously, on Friday now, the new rule for this year, of course, is Friday sessions, they aren't using the race engines they were last year. So, interesting, the two-engine rule from last year was actually tougher than the two-engine rule from this year. Sorry, two-race rule per engine for this year, because you haven't got to use those engines on Friday. The Friday engines are completely different engines for the 2-hour-and-a-half sessions. So they have to put it in on Friday evening. And I think at that point they'll have to decide when they pressurise it up and run it on the, you know, statically, whether it's an issue they can live with. Personally, I would expect that if there's any problem at all, they will change it. Because, zero point, as we've been seeing before, is a disaster. So, you know, so the fact is that Ferrari should be able to get itself into third or fourth anyway. Given the fact that Malaysia is a track where you can overtake, and given the fact that Malaysia can be a lottery of rain anyway, it's, you know, it's not like having to go 10 places back in Monaco, which is a disaster. There are still plenty of chances of moving forward, so I think if they are anything less than 100% certain they will change it, they'll take the hit and they'll then start going for fourth or third if, they, you know, if a McLaren breaks down.
Okay. Do we know if anyone else has got any engine troubles?
I haven't actually looked into it. I mean, people are paying very close to their chest. I mean, I know that a couple of the people were concerned, but they actually had, I think, BMW are much more concerned with their gearboxes and their engines, as that was what took over Kubica out of the last race, and there's muttering they haven't quite got that gearbox right at all. Renault were very happy with what they did in the testing, certainly with regards to using the tyres. So no one else, I think, is going to have to take a 10-place penalty yet, but of course it really always depends on what happens when they actually start running those things on Saturday morning.
Okay, let's move on to the next story, which concerns Bernie Eccleston.
Oh, lovely, cuddly Bernie.
We love Bernie.
Who thinks that Formula One should continue running at its traditional venues.
We're right.
What, apart from Silverstone, clearly?
Yeah.
No, he would like to see Silverstone retain the British Grand Prix.
I think from that he's kind of assumed the traditional venue for the French Grand Prix, therefore obviously isn't its home for the last 13 years of May Corps, but somewhere traditional, like, I don't know, Paul Ricard.
Or Euro Disney.
Yes, owned by B. Eccleston Esquire.
Euro Disney.
Yeah. That's not true, actually. I think it's owned by his wife.
I mean, John, you could probably answer me this question, because you obviously know more. Why do they never mention Le Mans, which is a perfectly good circuit, circuit up to stand in the Bugatti part of the circuit to run a Grand Prix, and does run a MotoGP? Why do they it's dismissed, out of hand. The Automobile Club du West, who have no interest in running a Grand Prix. Why is that?
They run one once in 1971. It used to be at Rouen-les-Arts and Reims. And for some reason in 1969, I think it was. Sorry, I'm just working back through the years there. It might have been 1969. It ran at Le Mans for, I think, it's one and only time. But you're right. I mean, particularly with the changes that have been made to the track now, running down under the Dunlop Bridge and down towards the S's, where it now traces a very car-friendly arc into the circuit permanent, the Bugatti circuit, as it's better known as. And of course, people like DTM raced there last year, Nick, so there's clearly no reason why they couldn't race there.
Well, MotoGP and DTM and obviously the Le Mans 24 Hours, I mean, I don't believe there's any I haven't got the licence, but I believe there is nothing that needs to be done for it to get a Grade 1 licence. But it's basically said that the Automobile Club West is not interested in running a Grand Prix, even though they have a circuit that's, an hour and a half, or 2 hours in Paris, but which will get a very good catchment period of people and has a tradition of racing.
Be an hour on the it's an hour on the train from Paris. It's the first stop on the TGV.
Well, even closer to Paris, and even closer to the Paris airports is Euro Disney.
And the Bahrain money.
Which has, I'm reliably informed, been offered the chance to stage the French Grand Prix.
This is not new, though, Tim, is it? Because there was talk of this some years ago.
Basically,
about Euro Disney.
The operators of Euro Disney are looking for some way of getting French people to actually go there.
Mm. Well, it's true, because most of Euro Disney's... I mean, we could talk about Euro Disney for years, but obviously the Americans have an obsession with Paris, which kind of goes past the practical idea of putting a place someone wants to go. Yeah, they turn down London, which is fair enough for the weather, and they turn down Barcelona. Everyone goes, why? You know, because Barcelona would be much better. Because Paris, obviously, is the most visited city in the world, though. But, yeah, I mean, you have to say, if you're going to build a new track somewhere, then... Euro Disney is the absolute ideal place to build it. It's going to have 70,000
hotels. They are actually talking about building a track like they did at Disneyland, because they did have an oval at Disneyland for a while in Florida, and they had the Disneyland 300 or whatever it was.
That was all very incestuous in itself, because of course Disney own Disneyland and also own ESPN, who were the TV partner and one of the sponsors of the championship that actually ran that race.
Well, you're not saying that these things all link together, do you? No, I think if the money can be found, it's another riff again, then there's no reason why they shouldn't, why Herman Tilke, I'm sure it'll be he, who shouldn't build a decent circuit. Then if he builds it Disneyland, at least we can all call it Mickey Mouse.
He's here all week, ladies and gentlemen.
And going back to the original Bernie Eccleston story, as well as seeing these traditional events retained, he would like to see some more events from new venues alongside them.
Mm.
So we're going to have a 28 race calendar next year.
He wants 20.
He does want 20.
Which means that he's got... John, that means with France backing out, that means next year he's got space for four new venues.
Abu Dhabi clearly. And Korea are already confirmed.
What, for next year? I thought Korea was 2009.
No, for the future.
Singapore will be signed
Singapore,
in the week.
Mexico.
I don't think so. Mexico, not wishing to be unkind, but Mexico got severe organisational issues.
Russia?
Yes, theoretically, but never happened.
Turkey?
They've got one. India?
India, yeah. But
of
think,
course.
But yeah, I mean, I think, yeah. I'm sure
Milton Keynes.
I think Imola's trying to get us back on the map again.
You're forgetting Milton Keynes. They could run around the lake. Yeah. It'd be fantastic. Willen Lake, I think.
It's called Silverstone.
Now that is Mickey Mouse.
Vijay Mallya, the owner of Kingfisher Airlines, who will be sponsors of the Kingfisher Airlines Grand Prix of India, presumably.
Kingfisher Airlines, I thought it was a beer. You see, that doesn't give me any confidence of getting on that plane at all. An airline that's named after a beer.
Mm.
And Vicky Chantock.
Also, plunge into the water, don't they?
Yes, exactly. And hammer their noses off things. No, that's the wrong name for your airline. Oh, that's right, yes, okay.
Eccleston remains keen on a street race through New Delhi.
What's that?
Presumably without the tuk-tuks and the ambassadors.
Did you get extra points for running a rabid dog?
and it may be a night race.
Every night race now. Have you noticed? Have you not noticed that? How many column inches have been created by a simple column about night races? Everything you see is night race. Night race, night race, night race, night race. Yeah. And the thing now about Queensland, when they build a circuit up in northern part of Australia, you know, and it's going to be built especially for a night race. I mean, it's like, God, come on, calm down, everyone. Just you mentioned it once. Like, everything's about night racing.
Well, in that part of the world, it is. Singapore, Japan and Australia already in talks to stage
Milton Keynes has got a head start on everyone else. They've already got the little street lights up round Willens Lake, and you could use the National Hockey Stadium as the pits.
But on a more serious point, I think one of the other places that may well get a GP is they may get Suzuka back in again and have two in Japan.
You can never have enough races in Japan.
Well, you can.
Is it big in Japan, is it?
Tonight. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Alphaville, I think you'll find.
Oh, yeah.
That's the first part of the news, then. We'll be back with more on Midway Motorsport. And I'll try and drum up some excitement from myself for the news. I apologise for being slightly dismissive about those F1 stories. More from the news desk with Tim and Nick next on Midweek Motorsport.
Midweek Motorsport on Globecast Radio.
It's Midweek Motorsport. I'm John Heindorf in Wellingborough. And in Norwich...
I'm Tim Gray.
Oh, not for the quiz of the week. He's Tim Gray.
And meanwhile, our F1 correspondent Nick Dearman is, as ever, in Silverstone.
Well, which he's not always there. Sometimes he goes to other circuits.
No,
don't forget, earlier this year I was in Finland. Sorry, Norway. I was in Norway. God, yeah, I'm Finland. I'm
not Norwegian.
You have also joined us in the past from some cheap travel lodge type place in Surrey.
That's true, actually. I am living the high life of motorsport, aren't I?
Before we go on with the news, can I just mention one of our listeners, William Leach, who emailed us a couple of weeks ago about some questions for Liz Halliday, which we asked on the show, and he says, in my entry for the weirdest place people have listened to Midweek Motorsport from, I'm listening tonight from a moving train. William Leach, we salute you.
I've listened to Midweek Motorsport's one of the repeats on a moving train before.
He's asking about the Sebring podcast as well. Well, we should have that done after the weekend, Tim, shouldn't we?
Yes. Well,
once you have it from me.
Repeating Sebring at the weekend as well.
Oh, really?
As well as all our live action.
Oh, fantastic. And St. Pete's, when will that be up as a podcast?
Well, that should be up as a podcast shortly. Probably just after Sebring, I'd have thought.
Okay.
So
okay,
next week you can go back and listen to lots and lots of
sports car races.
Good. This weekend, though, Alan Hyde and myself will be here to take you through all the major motorsport events over the Easter bank holiday.
There aren't any.
There's buckets of them.
There's a Malaysian Grand Prix to start with.
British GT in the F3.
At Brands Hatch. And the opening round of the Formula Palmer Audi Championship at Silverstone on Saturday.
Yeah, that would be a massive crowd.
Must remember not to drive down the
A43 on Saturday. And
yeah, both those cars be in the way.
Italian Giorgio Ascanelli has joined Scuderia Toro Rosso as its technical director.
Really?
Yes, he has.
The 48-year-old spent the last 5 years as technical director overseeing Maserati's racing activities.
No. Well, both of them.
Before that, he worked in Formula One with Benetton, McLaren and Ferrari.
Yes.
Where he was race engineer to Gerhard Berger, now, the former racing driver,
who's
now co-owner of Scuderia Toro Rosso.
What do technical directors normally do?
Do they sit on the pit wall and shout at people?
No, they normally help develop the car. You know?
Right.
Yeah. So they employed a bloke. Normally, if they employ a guy with no recent experience of F1 to develop a car, could be an issue. If it wasn't the fact that he hasn't actually got a car to develop.
No.
Because the car,
is being developed by
their overseeing and completely non-involved with either team directly, Adrian Newey at Red Bull, whatever it's called, the holding company, which isn't...
No. Now, listen, I'll tell you what he's going to be doing. Ascanelli is going to be looking into the energy storage systems and hybrid technology that F1 will be adopting in the future.
No, he won't.
That's what it says.
Do you not sometimes get really annoyed when press releases insult your intelligence? Everybody knows how Toro Rosso and Red Bull work. Everybody knows they have a rather well-known development and technical director called Adrian Newey, who's
got a bit of form, in fairness,
and he's developing things for the team. It's just. Yeah, yes, well, they've got a technical director. I'm sure, in fact, what Tim said, the original director description, yes, he probably will sit in the pit lane and shout at people, which is fine. He may do a bit of strategy. He may be more Pat Simmonsy, but he's not going to go in investigating anything. There's no budget to investigate stuff. They get the cast off from upstairs. And don't try and pretend you don't.
Okay, fine. Rant over.
I'm sorry, Nick Dearman, down from his box. If you're going to go down one way and say, you know, customer, then don't try and turn. You know, I don't remember when everyone rang, you know, customer March 721 chassis went back and said, they're all going, oh, look at us running our special development. No, they were just buying the chassis and bugging on the track with a Hewland gearbox and a Cosworth DFE and trying to win a race or get sick or something.
I bet those teams had technical people, though.
Well, possibly, but I still think.
Can we talk about, if we're going to talk technical, can we talk about bendy floors?
Ah, there's no such thing anymore. They've outlawed the bendy floor. I said it five times fast.
They've outlawed the bendy floor.
All right, well done then. So obviously after the suspicions that both BMW and Ferrari are gaining from a floor which distorted under, which wouldn't move under
the load.
Which wouldn't move under the load, regulated by the FIA because of the support, but then had a special support spring in the support, which meant it could deflect, which apparently would reduce drag and therefore give them along a straight anything up to 0.2 or 0.3 a second, which is a hell of a lot of time.
Who was using this team? Which teams were using it?
Nick?
Definitely. Well,
everybody.
Rumours are that everyone had it to aversion. Williams have come out and said they've had to make notes. But what they've now said is that this test that they were doing with the stay in place now has to be passed without the stay. So basically the floor can no longer be supported at all. And therefore, you know, it has that structural integrity. So, I mean, they have to do it. Williams said they hadn't got to do anything to theirs, and Spike said they hadn't got to do anything to theirs, and everyone else had kind of shuffled their feet and said nothing. I think it's one of these things where, actually, it's a little bit like mass dampers, actually, in that everyone was using mass dampers, but only actually Renault really got them to work well. So everyone else said, well, we don't like them anymore. I think, again, it looks very much like Ferrari have really worked out how to get an edge on it, and certainly BMW apparently have as well, whereas McLaren, again, because let's be honest, we don't blame Ferrari for mass dampers, it wasn't just them. McLaren have gone, oh, it's not really doing much for us, and they've managed to get the law slightly tweaked, and the perceived advantage is gone. Now, it's very likely that there wasn't an awful lot there, maybe, you know, 0.005 of a second, or perhaps at best a tenth, but obviously one of the nice things that it does, and, you know, as we saw last year at Renault, is that the taking off of a piece of equipment isn't necessarily the problem. The problem is the team then has to adapt to the strategy of how the car works and spend development time de-engineering something rather than moving forward. So that's really what the advantage of it. It actually distracts the team from moving forward.
If you say so. And just one more thing that I want to talk about on the technical front. It's not really terribly technical, but finally we've decided that how are we going to tell which is the soft tyre, haven't we, at the next Grand Prix?
Yeah, they're painting a white line at the bottom of one of the grooves. I think it's the second one in, but it does work very well. The car's coming towards you and there's a big white line and it's around the option tyre. I think actually from it might be the option tyre, might be the hard tyre actually at Malaysia, because they're not very happy with the hard tyre, so everyone's going to run the medium, which is the softer of the two, it seems, for most of the time, unless it's very strange occurrences happen, and the hard will be one which no one wants to use, so that may well go
the
option.
It's the bottom of the second inside groove of the softer tyre will be painted right.
It will be the softer regardless. It's not the option, they decided to go with the softer.
It's the soft tyre,
okay.
And apparently sales of Tipp have gone up in Malaysia by about 2,000%.
Oh, they're going to use radiator gloss. Apparently, it wouldn't dry in time.
Tim, have you got one more for this section?
Yes, this is actually a story that's come from Reuters. So it was in the Reuters Motorsport wires, and I printed it out. And actually, looking at it, there's only a glancing amount of motorsport in it, but
a glancing nod.
Anyway, Beijing wants to capitalise on hosting the 2008 Olympics by turning the city into one of the world's top sporting centres, and set aside 500 million yuan to fund the project.
How much is that?
That's
£8.70.
$65 million.
That's interesting, because is it not Beijing that's just pulled out of the A1 GP round it had?
I think it was kind of dropped rather than pulled
It was a political pullout, wasn't it?
It was the fact that the street circuit on which they ran had some issues, didn't it?
Well, the story said huge losses as well.
Not being wide enough to start with. And
last month, the Shanghai Daily reported that it was going to be dropped because the promoters can't afford to cover the, quotes, huge losses.
Well,
we have worked our socks off to get everything right for both rounds over the past few months, said Huan Yuki, Haiyi's deputy general manager, but the financial burden to stage two races in a year is overwhelming with huge losses, therefore we've decided to drop the Beijing leg next season. Cost about 20 million yuan, which is about $2.6 million.
Yes.
And they didn't get the money back.
Yeah, I think the other point about it is, I mean, it's interesting. We all know people who do the A1GP series, and it did appear that, unlike in the Shanghai round, the Beijing round was suffering very, very badly from Chinese bureaucracy.
Yes.
At a number of levels. In that people weren't talking to people. The various different police forces which they have there, like local and national, weren't communicating. And it did seem the whole thing was very close to disappearing up its own backside, literally just in Chinese bureaucracy, which doesn't seem to affect the Shanghai circuit at all.
How did the what was the motorsport part of that story then, Tim? Because we never even got to that before we went off on a tangent, which we do very well.
Oh, good at.
Yes.
This year, Shanghai hosts Formula One and A1 Grand Prix, a round of the Motorcycling World Championships, three of the four European Tour co-sanctioned golf events, the Tennis Masters Cup, and the final of the Women's Soccer World Cup.
Football.
Yeah, women's football at that.
Women's football. Monkey
tennis. What do you call that? Yes, monkey tennis.
As indeed it's...
known in sports television. I think there's some very good football matches in women's football. I like watching it. It's a very pure form of the game. Nobody dives. They get kicked. They get fall
they
over. They get up
over.
And play. Yeah, but I much prefer that than having all these cheating foreigners in our game. Anyway, carry on.
That's pretty much all from that story.
Okay, and is that the lot for the news? Have we got a little bit more to come?
We have more news to come a little later on in the show.
If it's on the road or on the track, it's on Globecast Radio. Music and cars. What a combination.
Now, a couple of weeks ago on the show, when we did our F1 preview, we brought in race car engineering Sam Collins, and I'm glad to say he's back with us again today. We had our first Grand Prix of the season already. We're looking forward to Malaysia now in a couple of weeks. But the reason we've got you in is because some weeks ago we also mentioned Max Mosley's ideas for the future and we laughed at them. But the 2011 engine is likely to happen, isn't it? Tell us what actually is this new engine is all about.
Well, it's going to happen. We can't avoid it. Basically, Formula One for years and years has been eating a lot of fossil fuels, burning a lot of fuels, and just developing Formula One cars for the sake of developing Formula One cars, it's not really giving anything to any other industry, particularly the automotive industry that funds it. The only other real industry actually that benefits from it is the military industry. So the missiles fly a little bit faster and unmanned submarines go a little bit better because they're using Formula One technology. But that's it. I mean, the teams are spending millions developing a gear that's half a millimetre narrower than the last one, and then no one can see it. Who cares? It doesn't matter to the fan. It doesn't matter to the engineering magazines, I can tell you that. All it matters to is the team to go a little bit quicker. No, it's not interesting technology, but it's expensive technology. So what the FIA have tried to do is try to bring the engine regulations, make them a bit more relevant to the road car producers. And the road car producers are also producing small capacity turbocharged engines and looking at energy hybrids, basically, energy recovery. And that's the way Formula One is going. We're going to go over to small capacity engines, so probably up to 2 litre.
We've already reduced them from 3.5 down to 2.4, so we think further reduction down to 2 litre?
I'm pretty sure we're going to go to 2 litre.
So you'll find that probably a quarter of the people in this country will have a bigger engine in their road car than a Formula One.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. And these 2 litre engines are probably going to have turbochargers on. Well, I know they will have turbochargers on. But what they're doing with the turbochargers is quite interesting. It's not like the turbocharged 1500 big bangers of the mid-80s. This is a lot cleverer. These engines, okay, whilst they'll be putting out the same sorts of horsepower as they do now, maybe slightly reduced because we're using 400cc, but that's not a massive amount. They could be different layouts completely. So there are those who are encouraging people to build 2 litre V12s with tiny little cylinders, which is going to be brilliant, lovely little dinky things. And the other major thing is the turbochargers, as I say, they're going to be turbo-compounded. Now, you're looking at me saying, what's a turbo compound? Yeah. What's he talking about? Now, when I heard this word, I had to check it was a real word, and then I had to Google it to find out what it actually was, because I'd never heard of it. Now, it's something that goes back to 1940s aeroplanes and the plane.
Ooh.
Yeah, indeed.
Cutting-edge technology.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And a plane called the Napier Nomad, which I know nothing about, but probably some of your listeners will be able to tell you plenty about. I have no interest in nothing about it apart from the technology.
Anyone who's ever heard of a Napier Nomad, studio at 0157.org.
Basically, what it does, you've got a conventional turbocharger, which does what turbochargers do. It makes the engine have better torque, it just feeds the exhaust gases back and just blows the air in the air-fuel mixture into the engine a bit more. The second turbocharger in the system is based further down the exhaust system, and what it does is it uses the exhaust gases, the velocity of the exhaust gases, which obviously if you watch Formula 1 ever, you see they come screaming out the back, mm-hmm. flames and everything. Now, they're using this second turbocharger in that exhaust system to spin up the turbine in the middle of the turbocharger.
Mm-hmm.
That's feeding the torque, as much torque as it can generate, through an electric generator back into the driving system. So it might go back into the engine, or it might go back into the drivetrain. It depends on your design. But this system will use two turbochargers to produce more torque than the engine, and it's recovering waste power. So all that energy from the gases rushing down the exhaust pipe, spinning, are now going to be used to spin up a turbocharger and feed the energy back in. So that's the first piece of energy recovery you're going to find on the car.
While we're on this subject, presumably the faster they can get the exhaust gases to flow out of the exhaust, then the more energy they can recover this way.
That's right. I mean, but they're already going damn fast now.
But is this not going to bring a cooling problem?
Well, no. This is the next part of the energy recovery. Now, one of the big problems that Max Mauvey's banged on and on about, if anybody ever reads the FIA website, I don't know if anybody ever does, but I do, is that I think it's a third of the fuel you put into your road car is lost as waste heat through the exhaust, through the heat from the engine block. Now, what the FIA want to do is see the Formula One teams develop methods of exhaust heat recovery. So what this would mean is you'll no longer see the snake pit exhausts coming out the side of the engine and coiling their way out the back of the car. Instead, what you might see is what look like water tanks around them.
Okay.
And I'm not certain yet how these water tanks are going to feed the power back into the system, but I believe it's going to be based on some sort of steam technology, again driving generators, which will again feed into an overall generating system in the drivetrain.
So we're talking about early 19th century technology here,
yeah,
then.
Newcomen will be familiar with this, and Fred Dibner would like it.
Yeah.
And so, we could be looking at steam. I mean, it probably won't be using water, to be honest. It'll be using other fluids, but yeah, they're using the heat to drive turbines, and that's going to send more power through the drivetrain. Again, not power that's going to be used. So you're effectively increasing the thermal efficiency, I love that word, of the engine. And this is going to make everything go a little bit quicker as well. So actually, what we could end up seeing with those two systems on their own is more powerful engines, even though they're smaller capacity. So we could be seeing equivalency of up to 1,000 brake horsepower. Though I don't think the FIA are ever going to let that happen. I think we're going to be stuck at around the 700 horsepower mark.
One thing that's always struck me is why don't they point the exhausts at the back of the rear tyres, so that way you're getting heat onto the tyres as well, which means that you can run a more efficient car in the first place.
You'd melt the tyres, the exhaust way too hot. I mean, if you look at the back of a Formula One car, you see some of the cars, I think the McLarens will use this gold film, because the carbon fibre would melt because it's that hot. They can't keep they have to put special coatings on the backs of cars. On some cars, they're using a coating that was developed for cooling nuclear fuel rods, and was developed at Harwell, the big atomic research establishment out in Oxfordshire. So, I mean, they're using some really high-tech stuff to keep the heat down. Carbon fibre has serious problems with extreme heat, so, you know, they really have to develop the carbon and the composites to handle
the biggest
heat.
One, of course, being that it catches into bursts into flames.
It can burst into flames, it can melt, it can just fall apart and delaminate. It just becomes useless at certain temperatures. So they have to find ways to get rid of this heat, and pumping the heat into the tyres, whilst it's a nice idea to get the heat into the tyres, you can overheat your tyre, and again, you just get blistering and the tyre would come apart and it would melt and it'd be a big mess. But it's a nice idea.
Now, there's also been talk about recovering energy through braking.
That's right, we're actually going to see that in 2009 rather than 2011. This is something that the manufacturers are actually struggling to get their heads around as we speak in design offices up and down the country, because within 12 months of us talking, they're going to have to be testing these systems. And what we're going to be looking at is when the car brakes, which on some circuits is for as long as 15 seconds a lap, on other circuits it's down to about 10. And the longest braking period, I think, is 3.8 seconds on one of the Tilka circuits. I think it might be Malaysia. It's Turkey, it's not Malaysia.
Now that we're going to Fuji this year with its very long straight, we might see an even longer one there?
Indeed. I mean, we could see that again. So what they want to do, what the FIA want to see, is they want to see the drivers be able to reuse some of that braking energy. And everyone's going, well, what is this energy? Well, when you stamp on the brakes, even in a go-kart or a Formula One car, loads of the energy, and this is back to GCSE physics, but loads of that energy has got to go somewhere. You can't destroy energy, you can't dissipate it. You just have to convert it into another form. So it's converted into noise, and primarily converted into heat. So you see these big glowing brake discs. Now, how can you get that energy back? I mean, it's a waste of energy. It's going, you're not using it. So there's been four methods have been proposed. And the first method is using a hydraulic system in the brakes to use the energy. And then when the car brakes, it builds up hydraulic pressure again, like a super soaker, mm-hmm. if you like. That's a good analogy. A super soaker. So you just pump it up again, and you get more pressure to squirt. And that gives you that squirting pressure. And that squirting pressure would be used into the drivetrain of the car, the gearbox of the car, and will just make the rear wheels squirt, maybe an extra 50 brake horsepower for about 2 seconds. Enough to go blatting past somebody, maybe once a lap. But
you don't necessarily want that when you're going into a really tight corner. You don't suddenly want to have an extra 50 horsepower into your engine.
That's just it. So you have to control it. So the energy has to be stored somewhere. And this is the problem with the hydraulic system. Now, the hydraulics are lovely if you can get them to work, but in an impact at 200 mile an hour, you don't want stored up hydraulics hitting something. You're going to get a very big bang. But the FIA haven't banned this system yet. I know some teams are actively investigating that route. Other teams are obviously looking down the electric route. Mm-hmm. So how can you generate electricity from the brakes? You can use clockwork, if you like, if you're crazy enough. It would work, but it would be quite heavy, I think.
Have you got enough room on your brake system?
The brake disc itself could be converted into a clockwork system.
Okay.
We actually printed it. We had a guy who drew up a concept sketch of it like that, and we printed that in our current issue. But I don't think it would actually work in practice that well, and there'd be better routes to go. The other way to look at it is using flywheels. Mm-hmm. You use the energy generation flywheels, so you can spin up these little flywheels, and they'll feed energy back into a generator, and that'll fire it electrically, using an electric motor to fire the wheels up and give you that little squirt of equivalent to 50 brake horsepower. But again, there's a lot of development to be done on there. I mean, these systems aren't fully regulated for yet. The FIA haven't said very much about what you can and can't do. Now, what they have said is they can't weigh more than 20 kilograms.
Okay.
The other thing they said is it must only act on the rear wheel. So whilst you can use the energy from braking from the front wheels, as I understand it, you can't act on the front wheels to drive the car. So it can't go four-wheel drive. So you've got to only act on the driven wheels, the two wheels at the back. And sort of beyond that, the FIA haven't really told the teams which way to go. So I was chatting to Luca Marmarini, from Toyota, and he was saying to me that they've looked at four different methods, and they haven't chosen one. They're working on developing it. It's very expensive, and they don't really know what they're doing, because they think the FIA are likely to ban three of the four methods. And I was talking to another team member from another team, and he was telling me that whilst his boss had mentioned it to him, look, have you thought about this energy recovery system? And he said, well, no, not yet. I'm busy designing a racing car. He said, well, we really should, but we haven't got time. He said, what do the regulations say? He said, well, not a lot, really, so we don't really know what we're supposed to be doing with it.
Okay.
So I think we might see a few teams appearing with it. I mean, certainly McLaren will, because they've already gone some way down that route in the past and had it banned. But I think what we will see is come when it comes in, you'll see two or three teams initially with different systems, and then everything could eventually develop down to one single system, and then the FIA will regulate around that. But there's some safety, real safety implications with it, because, you know, if you've got little flywheels or hydraulic pressure or batteries, I mean, all these things store a lot of energy, and that can cause big bangs when you hit something, and I don't know. Is it safe? We'll find out, won't we?
What other developments are we going to see in 2011, then?
2011, I mean, the cars are going to be very different as well. I mean, over the look of the cars, I mean, they're going to look like Formula One cars. That much, I think, has been said by Bernie Eccleston in the past. They've got to look like Formula One cars, and they've got to sound like Formula One cars. If they don't, that's it, they're out. But the aerodynamics may even be a control aerodynamic. So the cars may actually all look the same, which I think is terrible. But I don't think that will be allowed to go through, because I think most of the fans will say, no, that's a rubbish idea, let's not go down mm-hmm. that route. But what teams may have to do is they launch their car, and now we see the teams launch the car and then they develop it. Well, what you might have to happen is the team will launch their car and only be allowed to change it twice through the entire season, and that's it. So if you start with a dog, you're going to end the season with a dog.
Yeah.
So this could have a big effect. It's supposed to cut costs. And then there's lots of other restrictions on testing. They're talking about restricting wind tunnel testing and rig testing, which is going to see a lot of people put out of their jobs, I think. I mean, the engine regulations have already seen a few people lose their jobs, and commercial pressure saw 200 people lose their jobs in Toyota a few months ago. So I don't know if the FIA are thinking about people's careers either.
Okay, Sam, well, thanks very much for joining us again, and maybe later in the season we'll get you back in and discuss some technical development in Formula One again.
Certainly.
The Globecast Radio Channel, home of live sports coverage, where it just keeps on coming.
In the second hour of Midweek Motorsport tonight, we'll get that update for you on Thomas Enger's condition after that terrible-looking accident at St. Pete's in the LMS second round at the weekend. We've got Declan Brennan, who's had his ear on the ovals, and plenty to listen to and indeed talk about there with Declan in this next hour. Also, a bit more motorsport news to come for you. We'll have Nick Damon back on the telephone and a special guest for Call My Hoof. That's all in hour two of this week's Midweek Motorsports.
The Globecast Radio Channel, home of live sports coverage, where it just keeps on coming.
Welcome back to Midweek Motorsport. Time now for a little more motorsport news. And Tim Greer has a little bit of GP2 for us.
Indeed I do, John. And Chinese racing driver Hopin Chung will race for the BCN competition team in the
BCN
2 series, the team officially announced today. The Formula 1 support series, which will be starting in Bahrain on April the 13th and 15th, which prevents Hopin Chung from competing in the Shanghai edition of the A1 GP Championship on the same date. Reigning F3 champion Hopin Chung has never made it a secret that his ambition is to become the first ever Chinese F1 racing driver. GP2 series is the perfect launching platform for that. He said, "I do deeply regret my absence in Shanghai. Ever since I had the honour to represent China in A1 GP, my aim was to race at the Shanghai circuit. Unfortunately, this is now impossible." Well, despite his regret for not being able to defend the Chinese honour in A1 GP, Hopin Chung is full of motivation to make his appearance in GP2 a success. The GP2 races will be held the same weekends and locations of Formula 1 GP races from Bahrain to Spa.
Do you guys suppose the odd thing is basically we only picked up talking about Hopin Chung because he was a joke name from, was it German Recaro Formula 3? And,
yes.
And he's half the reason that Call My Huff exists.
Suddenly
he's forging quite a successful career, and he's actually quite good.
I think it was him and that Philippe guy, wasn't it? Philippe Albuquerque.
Albuquerque.
That's it.
That's how we got. That was very good on the switches there.
It's amazing. The bloke really only started talking about the Mickey out of his name. Try not to do Marcus Ericsson from the weekend.
No, indeed.
And suddenly he's actually turned out to be pretty good.
He had previously, to us even mentioning him, done a test with Williams F1.
Yeah, but that was just because he was Chinese, wasn't it?
Just because he was Chinese, yes.
But of course, he's one of these Chinese-Dutch guys, isn't he, really?
Yes.
Just mention as well, while we're talking about China, that for the first time ever, the Champ Car World Series is going to be broadcast throughout China.
They have a race there, though, don't they?
Yes. Beijing, Guangdong Province, Shanghai, Chongqing, Tianjin, Fujian, Hubei, Shanxi, Kunxi, Zhangjiang, Sichuan, Shandong, Jingxi, Guizhang City, and Zhuhai City.
That's a really nice takeaway.
That's a list of provinces of China, for those of you who...
But interestingly, if you think
which
about
may pop up and call my hoof.
You've got you obviously don't know what channel it's on, but they've got a good chance, you would think, of getting like 75 million people watching it over there, when about 9 people watch it in America and 5 in Europe.
Well, I was having this discussion actually when we were out in the States, saying, do you realise that there's probably more people watch IRL, certainly in Champ Car, probably in Europe, and certainly in the possibly even in the UK, than actually watch it in America?
Certainly Champ Car. I think IRL's got a bit of a following in the States.
It hasn't really got a bit of a following in the Europe anyway.
Not according to what I saw at the weekend, I've got to tell you.
Was it not getting good points then? Because I've read some stuff where they're getting 2.5 or something, which apparently is like 14.5 million homes or something.
If it's getting 2.5, it's getting a better rating than any open wheel in the States has ever got.
Oh, well, it's a lie then, fair enough. You've got to be careful with this press release to come round.
We had.
That might be, Sorry, Tim, what was the point of the hoping...
Well, the point of that was that that means that we now have a complete grid of GP2 drivers.
Tim, as expert in Division 2 motorsport, I was under the impression that we did an item about 7 weeks ago saying that GP2 was full. So where's this space come from?
This space has come from a driver who actually didn't have enough money.
Oh, right, whose cheque bounced.
So, ART Grand Prix, Mikael Amamuller and Lucas Degrassi, Minardi,
Alexander Negrao,
Roldan Rodriguez, it won't take long, iSport International, Andreas Zuber and Timo Glock.
He's contractually obliged to do it to get
his
passes for something.
He's going to win.
Timo Glock.
He's going to win.
John, comments on Timo Glock?
Do we know if he's the same Glock as the armaments people?
Yes, he is.
No, he isn't, is the answer, because we now know.
Oh, do we finally know that? Timo Who asked
Glock,
him?
Timo Glock is absolutely no relation to company that make the arms. And also, the plastic gun, or plastic and ceramic gun, which Glock are alleged to have made, has never been made and doesn't exist, except in Die Hard 2.
Not true.
No, that is true. It's an urban myth that it exists.
They've never
made that gun.
So if I go on their website right now...
Yes.
I wouldn't be able to find a Tupperware gun.
You won't be able to find any gun which doesn't have metal parts in it. Arden International, Bruno Senna and Adrian Zaug, FMS, Antonio Pizzonia and Jason DeHinchy, Trident, Pastor Maldonado and Kohai Hirata, Racing Engineering, Javier Villa and Sergio Jimenez, Supernova, Luca Filippi and Mike Conway.
It's just an excuse to do the foreign accent, isn't it?
Yes, BCN Competition, Sakon Yamamoto and Hoping Kung, DPR are running Christian Backwood and Andy Suchek for the time being, Dams are running Kazuki Nakajima and Nicolas Lapierre, Campos are running Giorgio Pantano and Vitaly Petrov, Durango running Borja Garcia and Karen Chanduk.
That's actually quite a good lineup, isn't it?
It's a fantastic lineup.
Who's running Nakajima?
Nakajima is running for Dams.
Oh, right, so he has got a good team.
Alongside Nicolas Lapierre.
We should get an idea of how quick he really is then.
And don't forget that we will be having a full GP2 preview show later on this year as we approach the start of the GP2 season. Moving on to a different single-seater series now.
Surely it's next week, Tim?
Well... Yes, as we approach the start of the GP2 season.
Which is next week.
Have I got to make that by next week?
Yeah, can I just mention...
They're back-to-back Malaysia in Bahrain, aren't they?
Yes. Go on.
Can I just mention that Glock make a pistol with a plastic or polymer frame
in
it? But it is...
Metal-barreled.
It does have some metal in it, but also the plastic parts do... set off X-rays. X-ray thingy. So there you go.
There we are.
So they do make a plastic
if
pistol.
If someone wanted to build a gun that didn't set off any X-rays, it can be done. You have
of
now.
That
it but obviously, it isn't
with
something. It's not something that gun manufacturers are going to start advertising because they get clamped down on by the government, which they were trying to do their work in about 2 seconds flat.
New Zealand's Matt Halliday will drive for Conquest Racing for at least the first 3 rounds of the Champ Car season. The 27-year-old, who only drove the series' new DPO1 for the first time in spring training last month, impressed everyone with his pace and will make his Champ Car race debut at Las Vegas this weekend.
That championship's in serious trouble.
We've talked about this before, haven't we?
Funnily enough, we talked about, I think it was last week, we talked about and they'll scrape to 16, and they've scraped the 16 entries, but if you look at it,
Halliday only gets to 15. There are two more possibles which could take it to 17. They're Bruno Junqueiro at Dalecoin Racing and Catherine Legg also at Dalecoin Racing, but we don't know. There are also three drivers who... at least two of whom have done Champ Car before who could come back. Jan Halen, former British Formula Ford champion. Nicky Pastorelli, who is a former Formula Superfund US 2000 champion. And Andreas Wirth.
This race is on the streets of Las Vegas. It's not on the Oval, isn't it?
Correct.
So is it anywhere near where they used to have the old F1 track or not? Is it something
car
completely...
Park. That was the car park with his Palace Hotel, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And this isn't, is it not?
No, it's a put together right angles. I mean, we've discussed it in great length, but someone needs to bang their heads together in the States very quick before everything goes wrong. But it's the, did you see there's quite an interesting little thing about there's a kind of a spoiler concept that someone said that what might happen is that somebody has been chatting about possibly the France family starting a third single-seater series.
Of course they are.
And
which would replace both of them.
Which eventually would just by sheer... would replace both of them. And then in the end have Tony George say, all right, you can have Indy 500. And to be honest, it's probably the only way it's going to happen.
Okay, can we move on?
Yes.
Because it just depresses me when I look at American single-seater series that I used to enjoy watching so much.
Yeah, when they had 26, 28 cars. They had,
based on some of the best tracks in the world.
But when Zanardi won his championship... it was far better viewing, and I was doing F1, it was far better viewing than F1. It was fantastic in those sort of years, just after the split, and just before the money ran out, it was brilliant.
We will stay with single-seaters, because with more than a month until the first race of the season, 26 registrations have already been received for the Formula Renault BARC Championship.
Mm.
The low-cost single-seater series is intended to act as a feeder for the renowned Formula Renault UK Michelin Championship.
They had, 18 or was it 20 on the grid on Sunday?
Which had 18 on the grid.
And also, apparently, did you hear, we were chatting to a couple of drivers, and they've got a new aero package on the Class 1 Renault.
Yes.
Which makes it look more like a Formula 1 car. They've got chimneys for no discernible reason, apart from the fact it makes it look like an F1 car.
They appear to have slowed the car down.
Well, also, apparently, it can't follow anymore, because the new front wing, which is very much aping a modern F1 front wing, apparently, it suffers far more from disturbed air than the old one. In fact, as soon as they get near someone, the car washes out an understeer, whereas in the old wing, apparently, it was nothing like as bad. So it's basically taken away most of the overtaking opportunities.
Richard Singleton, of course, was the champion of Formula Renault BARC last year. He's already moved up to proper Formula Renault, so he won't be defending his title. But Ian Pearson, who won the club class last year, will, and he'll face competition from his father, Bob. Also returning is Howell Lloyd from Denbighshire, who made one appearance on the podium at the end of last year. And... David Scott, who is in the championship for his fourth season. Eurotech Motorsport, who were vice champions last year with Jordan Oaks, have two cars entered for the South Korean driver, Sung Hak Moon.
Yeah, you see, we need a jingle for him as well, don't we?
From Market Harbour.
Very good.
It's Market Harbour near Seoul.
And current Renault Formula ICA kart racer David McDonald, who's from Ewell in Surrey.
That's fantastic.
And finally, Joshua Brooks is going to be taking part.
Hurrah!
He is the nephew of Martin Johnson, Clio Cup.
Not the rugby player. Okay.
What you're saying is someone we've never heard of is a nephew of someone who's just about registering on the very bottom of motor racing's kind of radar.
Don't expect Nick Damon to be interviewing Martin Johnson on Satanta in 2 weeks' time, then.
Well, you know, I'll register him.
One more news story before we say goodbye to Nick, at least. And Martin Short, the Roll Centre Racing Team boss, who was delighted to find his Radical Judd on the list of 55 cars invited to the test day on 3rd of June, which you can hear live and exclusively here on Globecast Radio.
By Radio Le Mans.
is now withdrawn that car due to the fact that he doesn't have it anymore.
He sold it. This is an interesting story, actually, Tim, because the car's been up for sale since, in fact, since before he bought the Pescarolo that he's going to be running this year in P1, back to the top class. And he was struggling to get it sold. He had drivers ready to go and drive that car with funds to go and take it to Le Mans and take up its entry. However, the new owners don't want to race it. The new owners are Embassy Racing, I'm led to believe. That's Jonathan France's company who started Loft Life in the GTs. British GTs a couple of years ago with a Corvette.
And so they bought a Le Mans car with an entry and they don't want to race it.
They don't feel that their organisation is quite up to that yet. Now, I did the launch for them about 3 or 4 years ago of their GT3 Corvette, and Jonathan was absolutely adamant that he would get to Le Mans someday with his team, and it seems that that they have at least bought the car, and they'll be working towards an entry in at Le Mans with that car, or perhaps another prototype, not this year but next year. What it does mean, though, and this is I think this is quite sad, that Shorty won't be racing himself. The drivers will be Joao Barbosa, who's a real star and has really impressed in sports car racing.
Joao.
What does that say? Joao. He likes to be called Joao.
This is the guy's BMW, isn't it?
Before yes, but Jaime Mailer likes to be called Jamie now.
I know, he's... you can't keep up with him, can you? Former
Helio
British...
Castro Neves likes to be called Helio Castro Neves.
The other two drivers for the Pescarolo, the Deutsche Bank's ex-market World Centre Pescarolo, will be former British GT racing Fahil Keane and a British Formula 3 driver Stuart Hall. Okay.
Now, so what was this son of?
I don't know.
The other Hall who does heritage racing with you,
Mr. Hall.
Oh, really?
Pete Hall,
who drives with Andy Rouse.
Yes.
Okay. Now, the other thing that we should do to tie up this story is to say that because that car is gone, the first car on the reserve list gets into the race, which bizarrely isn't another prototype. It's in fact the PSI Experience Corvette. It's a C6R, which is the latest version, so that'll go into what is already a tremendous entry in GT1. I mean, only one Corvette in the field.
You only need three cars to be tremendous compared with the LMS, though.
Well, I was just going to say, only one car finished at St. Pete at the weekend because Johnny O'Connell's car pooped its transmission on a safety car period, and there was only two in it anyway. But in Europe, GT1 seems to be really capturing people's imagination at the moment. The team PSI are running in the FIA GTs, running second in the championship, and it's who is it? It's David Halliday and Claude-Yves Gosselin who drive that car. So they'll clearly be looking for a third driver, and it is the fifth Corvette to be in that GT1 category, which is quite interesting. Their major, competitors in that will be Aston Martin, who I'm fairly certain I saw somewhere that had added Johnny Herbert to the squad.
There's certainly some pictures in with the car, yeah.
Which is quite interesting.
Can we have him next week on the show?
Shall I ring him and ask him? He's
not right now. We're in the middle of a programme, John.
Well, I could if you wish.
No, we've got too much to do, and that means it's time to wrap up the news for now.
0157.org. Globecast Radio.
Well, last weekend, it was the second round of the American Le Mans Series, the Acura Sports Car Challenge from St. Petersburg. Live coverage, as with all of the American Le Mans Series, here on Globecast Radio. Now, we always get a goodly supply of emails coming in during the race, for which, thank you very much, everyone. I've been reading through them in the last couple of days. But by far, the biggest subject, as far as our email correspondence was concerned, in fact, a rather nasty looking incident about two-thirds of the way through the race, when the Peterson White Lightning Ferrari of Thomas Enger hit the wall between turns 3 and 4. Now, unfortunately, we went off the air before we could clear up exactly how Thomas was. We knew he was on the way to hospital, so I thought it would be only right and proper if we checked in with the team tonight, and I'm delighted to say that
Live from the USA is Tom Moore, who looks after the PR for Peterson White Lightning Racing. Tom, first of all, tell us how Thomas is and how the team are as well, because clearly that was quite a big impact and quite a big shock for everybody.
Well, John, thanks for having us on the show tonight to let everybody know that Tomas is doing very, very well. It obviously was a really, really big hit. I don't think there's a single part on that car that has not been bent or unfortunately burned. And but he is doing quite well and is on his way to Indianapolis, Indiana right now to have surgery on his left elbow, which was essentially, I hate using the word, but shattered in the incident.
Mm.
And Dr. Terry Trammell, who may be familiar to a lot of your listeners, world-renowned orthopedic surgeon that has done miracles on IndyCar drivers and just all kinds of race car drivers across the world. Dr. Trammell will be working on Tomas on Friday morning.
Well, in fact, it was Dr. Trammell who, I think, saved the life of Alex Zanardi, was it not, when he had his big shunt in Germany?
I do believe that is correct, yes.
Now, yeah, and Kenny Brick as well, as Tim chips in from London. Now, those that saw the incident, Tom, will, I'm sure, with me, say that it was a very bizarre-looking accident. It looked like the car was at an odd angle as it came through Turn 3, which is a very fast, sweeping 50-degree corner at St. Petersburg. It's a straight track, so there's no runoff. Heavy impact at an acute angle with, first of all, the left front and then all down the left side of the Ferrari. Has Thomas been able to tell you anything of what happened prior to the accident that might have caused the accident? It didn't seem as though anyone else was involved, for example.
No, unfortunately, at this point, he still does not remember much of the accident. The brain has a way of blocking those type of things out. But based on what we have been able to put together from other drivers that had been around, you know, laps before, and as well as looking at the car itself, there was slight right front damage on the right front fender, which we believe is where he made contact with the inside of the Turn 3 wall, which then threw him into the outside wall there.
There was some talk on some of the forums and message boards about the throttle being stuck open. Having seen the video, the wheels do still seem to be turning. Have you, at the team, been able to either substantiate that or indeed rule that out?
To be honest with you, John, no. I've not gotten any firm information one way or the other on that. It is something that we're looking into. It is believed, though, we're fairly confident in that if it was indeed stuck open, that was a cause or was an effect rather than a cause of the impact.
From the impact, yeah.
Correct.
Now we did see rather worryingly a bit of fire at the left wheel, the left hand side rear wheel of the car, which was just a bit of a flash fire. Now I know there's an oil cooler and I think a fuel cooler in that area of the car. Do we think that again just came from the severe impact on?
Correct, yes. There's also the vent filler hose or the vent return hose right there in that area as well. So there's a number of fuel and oil-related things that are all going on right there in that left side area. And that was, we definitely feel like that was an effect of the incident.
Now, Thomas wasn't able to travel by air because of his injuries, particularly with his broken ribs and his lungs. So, in fact, I believe that he's gone down to Indianapolis from the hospital at St. Pete's in one of the team motorhomes. Is that right?
That is correct. Michael Peterson has donated his motorhome, which for anyone who's ever made any kind of trip in a bus, this is certainly not what we're used to being taken back and forth to school, for instance, here in the States. It's quite nice. I have talked to Tomas on the trip, and he's doing quite well and just sleeping most of the way.
Yes, it's a very nice way to travel. Now, I know that this is a secondary consideration, really, that you know, we always think of the drivers first, and we always say metal can be mended. But can that car be mended, or is it pretty much looking like that car's going to be a write-off, Tom?
Most of that car is pretty much a write-off, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like another heralding experience here for the Dale White managed team, and with Dennis Chisma, our crew chief, and the whole team is going to have a lot of late hours. We have been able to acquire a tub from Ferrari. It'll be shipped over from Michelotto, or is in the process of being shipped. It'll arrive in Los Angeles on Saturday evening, when it will be picked up and taken directly to the shop.
Now, the last time you did this and came out with a brand new car, after you broke a Porsche, I seem to remember, you only went out and won with the brand new car, didn't you?
Yeah, that's it. This one is going to be a little bit more work. We have a few less days. You know, the car has to leave to head to Long Beach from the shop in Nevada on Wednesday morning. So, in essence, we're going to have Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday to work on the car. But if history has any way of repeating itself, it certainly would make a heck of a story here this weekend, too.
Well, that's something we'll be watching for at Long Beach in a couple of weekends' time. Another race, by the way, that you can hear live here on Globecast and Sky Channel 0157 and around the world on the web, of course. Now, clearly, Thomas is not going to be ready to race for you by that event, and possibly not even by Houston. Without giving any trade secrets away, have you already sorted out another driver, or are you still looking?
We have sorted out another driver. We will be announcing that shortly, still dotting some I's and crossing some T's with that. But we will be announcing that hopefully this week, and we're quite excited with the driver that we'll have in the 31 car this, you know, starting at Long Beach. You know, Tomas right now, we're hoping to have him back by about mid-season. He personally is hoping to be back by Salt Lake, but that's going to be asking an awful lot. So.
Well, I presume he wants to race at, for Aston at Le Mans as well, which is, I know he's one of his favorite races, all of our favorite races, of course.
For certain. Yes. He wants to go for that sixth straight pole position over there, so.
Yes, that's right. Now, just a couple of final things. I, like you, probably, you know, obviously we only saw the incident, what we saw of it was on replay on the Speed Channel coverage at the weekend from Wheeler TV. I know that our European viewers, because Motors took a break in exactly the wrong time, didn't get to see that incident, but it was quite a big hit, as we said. But also, I'm sure that you and the team would want to have a word for the safety intervention crew, particularly the doctor's car that was there first, and our new doctor in the ELMS who actually pulled Thomas out while the car was still on fire.
It, most definitely. The whole IMSA safety team, as well as everybody at Bayfront Medical Bayfront Medical Center, which is where Tomas was taken immediately after the incident, everybody at Dr. Trammell's office at Methodist Hospital, you know, we've even had, there's just been an outpouring, as you had mentioned earlier, the number of emails that you've received. There's been a huge outpouring of fan email that I keep sending straight on to Thomas. And, you know, I know he's very thankful of that. You know, it's just been great. Everybody from the sport, our competitors, as well as outside of the sport. Panther Racing, for instance, IndyCar Series team offered their jet to fly Tomas to Indianapolis. Unfortunately, because of the partially collapsed lung, we couldn't do that, but, you know, it's just been tremendous, and we certainly want to thank everybody who's done that, you know, all of the medical staff, everybody at the American Le Mans Series, Scott Atherton, Bob Dickinson, everyone. It's just been tremendous.
Is it just best for fans if they do want to send their messages of support or try to cheer Tomas up to just to send it to yourselves at the PWL website, Tom, is it?
Exactly. If they just want to send it to me at tom@petersonmotorsports.com, I am taking all those and forwarding them by fives to Tomas, and he's downloading those on the trip, which, you know, will take almost 24 hours to get up there by bus. And so he's downloading those and hoping to get to those as soon as he can. Typing with one arm won't be real quick, so it may take him some time to respond.
Just give us that email address again, Tom, if you would.
It is tom@petersonmotorsports.com. And Peterson is spelled P-E-T-E-R-S-E-N.
Ah, good point, yes. Peterson Motorsports with an S.com. Tom, thank you very much for being with us. Will you pass on our best wishes clearly to Thomas, but also to Dale and the rest of the crew? I know how much that can be a shock for any close-knit team, and I know that that is exactly what you guys are, and we'll keep our fingers crossed that we see you with a new tub and a new car out at Long Beach in a couple of weeks' time.
Great. Thanks, John. I appreciate you having me on, and thank again everybody for the great support, and I will pass on your best wishes to Tomas.
We know that when you listen to Globecast Radio via Sky, you need to be near your telly. Thousands of you do every week, but we know we're missing a trick. People that want to listen to us anywhere in the house, well, now you can. Thanks to the Sky Gnome. No, not a little red and green man with a silly pointy hat holding a fishing rod, but a rather natty little box in sophisticated blue or funky orange that's a portable wireless way of listening to Sky channels, all Sky channels, around the house. Although we, of course, know you'll only ever have it tuned to Globecast Radio. So now you can be in the dining room, the kitchen, the bathroom, the bedroom, garden, or the garage. Up to 30 metres away to use the remote, more if you just want to listen. Go to sky.com for full details of the Sky Gnome. Sound anywhere at home. Buy a gnome.
Sky Channel 0157 and 0157.org. Globecast Radio.
Well, clearly, that could... Can we mute that a bit? Thank you. Clearly, that could only mean one thing. It is the time of the night when we play Call My Hoof. New listeners to the programme may not know the story about Call My Hoof. Basically, we started off... This was driven by the listeners, and we were reading out spurious... copy from various championships and noticed that a lot of people had strange names, and so began a flood of names into the studio here at studio at 0157.org from yourselves, the listeners. So many, in fact, that we decided to break them up alphabetically and throw them into a game which was inspired by Rob Hoof and Ho Ping Tung, and basically called like, don't do that. Don't do that, and I knew that was going to be too loud. And so here we are then in... what letter of the alphabet have we got up to now, Tim?
This week it's the letter O.
The letter O. And joining us tonight from Tangley, which of course, as everybody knows, is in Hampshire, is none other than FIA GT, voice of the TV productions, and worldwide megastar, Fingers... known to the rest of the world as GT, Graham Tyler. Graham, good evening.
Good evening, John. How are you?
I'm very well, sir. I'm very well.
Good evening, listener.
You've heard our show before, clearly.
He was a listener 1 week.
He was a listener just for the 1 week, yes, as many people are. Now, what we have here, Graham, it's very simple. Tim is
That's
the
good.
Hoof... yes. Tim is the Hoofmeister, and he's very strict on this. What we have are eight names. Now, it's important that you know that all of these names are real people or things. There's nothing absolutely made up. There's absolutely
right.
nothing made up. So, there is nothing fictitious about this. They are real people or things. What we need to know from you is quite simply, are they a racing driver or not a racing driver? Okay, you've got eight to choose from, and let's, before we start off with GT, Graham Tyler, let's just have a quick look at the leaderboard. Tim, you've got it there with you in Norwich.
I do. Well, the leaderboard has come with me to Norwich from London, where it was last night, and obviously in transit, which I think we have to thank Mr. Alan Hyde for, because he seems to have jumped from... previously being joint last with 2 points out of 12. He suddenly
2 points
got
out of 8. Out of
sorry,
eight.
2 points out of 8. He's suddenly first with 12 points out of 8.
So you see, that's Heidi, isn't it? That's just Heidi playing about love, isn't it? you know, he doesn't like being bottom of the pile. Well, I don't know, I've seen some of those photographs, Alan. So, Heidi is at the bottom of the pile. Who's at the top of the pile at the moment?
At the top, it's Jeremy Shaw from Irvine in California. He has 7 out of 8.
A fine effort.
Charles Very Dressing, good. Innes Marlowe, Simon Hill and Declan Brennan are equal second on 6 points. Mm-hmm, 5 points go to Andrew Cotton, Henry Hope Frost and Martin Haven. Mm-hmm. On 4 points we have John Hindhoff and last week's contestant Matt James from Motorsport News.
Yep.
On 3 points Graham Goodwin.
He was pathetic.
And yes, and on just 2 points we have Nick Damon and Alan Hyde.
Damon only got 2 points, I've forgotten about that. So, Graham, that's what you've got to beat. All you have to do is give us a number between 1 and 8, and Tim will give you a name on Call My Hoof. What is your number?
Well, let's start with 5.
Let's start with number 5 and start with Manibu Orido.
Manibu Orido. Now, I've got to tell you, Graham, I never get to know what these are, so I'm afraid you're on your own on these. The other thing I should have mentioned is if they are racing drivers, they are all circuit racers. There's no rally drivers in there, and it's not necessarily split 4 and 4. So don't be drawn into that trap, as many people have been.
Manibu Orido?
Yes.
Oh, God. That's a driver.
Oh!
It is a driver. Fantastic.
It is a driver.
Do you know what he does? Any idea what he does?
I have a feeling he's... God, no, I don't. I really don't. Japanese GT, something like that.
It's a correct answer.
Oh, you Whoa. Don't get any extra points for that, but that's tremendous. I think we've got... I'll tell you what, mate, I'm impressed with this.
This is a guess so far.
Right, so he's taken number 5. Carry on, next number, please.
Well, let's go down one. Number 4.
Number 4. Marcus Österreich.
Yes, go on then. That's driver as well.
I know what he does.
Go on.
He's driven trucks before.
He was in the European Truck Racing Championship between 1992 and 2001. Oh, yeah.
You're sharp, Hindhoff, you're sharp.
Did you know before that, John?
Something bizarre, like German Formula Koenig or Formula 3 or something like that.
It was German, but it wasn't that bizarre because it was a DTM where
DTM
he was a world Opel driver for 4 okay. years.
I should have known that, actually. 2 for 2, Tyler, I'm impressed. Oh, pick another number.
Let's go down one more. Have 3.
Number 3. Peter Obendorfer.
Peter Obendorfer.
Yes.
Do we have a nationality on that, Tim?
He might be Germanic of some...
Got to be Germanic of some sort, isn't he?
Okay, fine.
He's actually Austrian, but...
Okay, Austrian. Driver or not a driver?
Obendorfer. It sounds as though it ought to be, doesn't it? No, I'm going to say no.
Well, this is one of those contentious ones. Do you remember a few months ago, we had that Flemish TV commentator who did a one-off race in the Porsche Supercup, but isn't really a driver.
Yes, yes, come on.
Right.
Well, Peter Obendorfer is also someone who's just done a one-off drive in the Porsche Supercup in the guest car.
Oh.
So, what does he do normally?
I have no idea, but he's not
he
a racing driver.
Oh, okay, fine. That would be like calling me a racing driver, wouldn't it, really?
I reckon he's a journalist.
No, okay. That would be like calling me a racing driver, which clearly I'm not.
I think that's 3 for 3, and I'll agree with you there, Tim. I don't think guest drives count. I think gentleman drivers count, but I don't think guest drives by journalists should count. Okay? Pick another number, Graham, please.
I'm going to keep going with the sequence. It's working so far, so that's number 2 next.
Number 2, Marco Oberhauser.
Marco Oberhauser.
Oberhauser.
Oh, I've got to say, this is not one I recognise, but don't be led by that at all.
No, nor I. No, that's a no.
That's your first wrong answer, then.
Oh, there you go.
He raced in the German Formula 3 Championship last year.
Oh, that silly little single-seaters. That's not even sports cars. That doesn't count. That's not driving.
Well, you see, the sequence is broken, Tyler. What would you like to go for next?
Let's go up to the top of the shop, then. Number 8.
Manta Oyamada.
Oyamada?
Yes.
First name was, sorry?
Manta. M-A-N-T-A.
Manta.
As in Opel, Manta.
As in Opel, yeah. Manta, oh yeah, Manta.
Known as Opel to his friends.
Oh, God.
Driver or not a driver, Graham? Got to press you for the answer.
Oh, sorry, okay. No.
And you'd be correct.
Oh, sir. Any idea what he might be, Graham?
Oh, no. Not a clue, but he sounds like another Japanese, but...
he is Japanese, yes.
Okay, I've absolutely no idea.
He's a character from the manga, film and video game spin-off, Shaman King.
Oh, fantastic.
That's why you knew him. You've got 1, 6 and 7 left by my...
Okay, well, let's go with the sequence again. Go with 7.
Number 7. William Ormsby Gore.
What a fantastic
Ormsby Gore?
Yes.
Is that one of the Hartford?
Related, yes.
Yes, okay.
Ormsby Gore. Is that one of the Hertfordshire Ormsby Gores?
Based on where he seems to have come from, I'd say no.
Ah.
William Ormsby Gore.
William Ormsby Gore. No.
You think he's not a racing driver?
He's not a racing driver. Oh, fantastic. I mean, he might have been a Bentley boy, but apparently not, so there you go.
He died in 1904, so...
Well, he might have been an early driver, who knows?
He may have been an early driver. Yeah. He was elected unopposed as the Conservative MP for County Sligo in the 1841 general election.
You may believe this or not, there's actually a branch of my family that came from Sligo, so there you go. You should have known that, mate.
Right, 6 or 1?
6, please.
Number 6, Christina Orr.
O-R-R,
yes.
Oh, yeah, she's a driver.
Is she?
No.
She is.
Oh, yes, she is! You lucky so-and-so!
Of course she is.
What does she drive, then, Graham?
I haven't a clue, but she sounds like a driver to me.
Christina Gould.
You had to have a token girlie, didn't you, you see?
Ooh, nothing about women.
Nothing talking about Christina Orr. She raced in the New Zealand Formula Ford Championship in the late 90s and later went on to Formula Holden.
Oh, good girl.
She was braver than me. That leaves you with number 1.
Well, let's do it.
Number 1. Paco Orti.
Yes.
He's very quick and he's very right. Good heavens.
There's a reason why you could be right on this one, isn't there, Graham?
Well, there probably is, but I don't know what it is.
He's an FIA GT driver.
FIA GT, ALMS and Grand Am.
When was this?
In the last 6 years, he's done all 3 championships.
Ah, right.
I recognise him from the LMS. Now...
Paco Orti. Brilliant, okay.
I think he drove a Ferrari GT2 car, but I could be wrong. Tim.
Yes.
Scores on the doors, mate.
Well, we can tell you that Graham Tyler...
From Tangley.
Tangley, near Andover in Hampshire, has scored... 7.
Whoa!
I tell you what,
leader.
I'm impressed.
What was the one that caught him out? Remind me which one caught him out?
That was Marco Oberhauser, the German F3 driver.
Yes, you'll never forget Marco Oberhauser now, will you?
Not anymore.
He's going to turn up in an FIA GT race soon, you just know he is.
I'd say that was unlikely, to be honest.
Graham Tyler, you are joint leader. And if proof was needed that we desperately need you back in the pit lane at Radio Le Mans and the LMS.
Just remind me with whom I'm joint leader, John.
Jeremy Shaw, who is
there you
in the
go.
Pit lane at LMS.
There
what
you
can
go.
I tell you?
Are we just the hottest team in the country or what?
Do you know what? We need to get Bradley on this in the next couple of weeks and see how he does. Graham Tyler.
should we give him
John, it's a pleasure.
Or something like that?
Always a pleasure, never a chore, Mr. Tyler. I'll speak to you soon.
Yeah, good man. Take care.
Graham Tyler then, joint top of the table on Call My Hoof here on Midweek Motorsport on Globecast 0157.
Well, what fun that was, John.
I'm terribly impressed with Mr. Tyler,
He was good, wasn't he?
Terribly impressed with Mr. Tyler. You're listening to Midweek Motorsport.
Indeed.
Just, 10 minutes left of the show tonight?
Yes. Now, of course, John, we've been saying all night that you're live from your dining room in Wellingborough.
Yes, I am, indeed. And as if to prove that, hang on a second...
I'm not in Wellingborough.
And now, from Norwich.
That's me.
It's the quiz of the week.
Now, of course, John, you recognise that music, don't you?
That is Dale of the Century, if I'm not mistaken.
It's very much Dale of the Century, yes.
This is our NASCAR quiz show that we were so... That in fact, I won the inaugural round off.
You did on a tie break based on the fact that Declan Brennan completely misvalued, overvalued, some might say, Ricky Rudd baby booties, wasn't it?
Correct, it was. It was indeed.
Declan Brennan, unfortunately, not with us this week, but we do have another round of Dale of the Century.
Oh, do we?
Yes. Bristol Motor Speedway hosted the very first NASCAR Cup Series race on an all-concrete surface in August 1992. This July, fans will get the opportunity to own a piece of that history. On the 1st of July, pieces of the original concrete surface from the start-finish line, where drivers like Dale Earnhardt, Darrell Waltrip, Jeff Gordon and Tony Stewart have celebrated Bristol victories, will be made available to fans looking to add the most unique...
That's not English. No, well, it's not. It's American, mate.
That's just very poor.
Like, momentarily.
Well, I was on hold earlier, and they used momentarily. I've told you this story already.
You just did that with Graham.
Yeah.
Yes. Carry on. I understand your problem. It's just about getting old, mate. Don't worry. If you've got one good story, just tell it over and over again. Never lose anything in the telling.
It's just that my attention span is momentarily.
Go on then. So what have you got for me this week?
The most unique of souvenirs to add to your racing memorabilia collection.
Okay.
Three versions of the collectible will be made available. So, first of all, a piece of concrete in an acrylic case.
Yes. What do you want me to say about it?
I'd like you to say how much you think that is worth. Piece of concrete...
How big is the concrete?
I don't know how big the concrete is. I don't know how big the acrylic case is. That may be a little bit of a disadvantage for you, but... What do you think we're looking at here?
$100.
Well, $100 would be quite
wrong.
A significant amount, but it would be wrong because that's just going to sell for $25.
Yeah, that's a bargain.
Bargain?
I think we should get one for Declan.
Maybe we
see, can. I'm desperately just trying to find something about this on the web, and I found the 2007 track resurfacing photo gallery from Bristol Motor Speedway, racing the way it ought to be. That's racing, R-A-C-I-N apostrophe, the way it, O-U-G-H-T apostrophe A-B, exclamation mark.
I do hope you're not trying to cheat here, Mr. Hindhoff.
No, it's, they have dug up Bristol Motor Speedway.
Part of it, yes. 12 by 14 inch framed piece of concrete from the start finish line.
$100.
You said $100 for the piece of concrete in an acrylic case. You were wrong then, and once again you are wrong.
Oh, disaster.
That will be selling for just $60.
Oh, good heavens. Okay.
Finally, we have the concrete showpiece. Now, I don't know how large the concrete showpiece is. I don't know whether it has any acrylic in it as well, or a frame, but it is called the concrete showpiece. How much will that sell for?
How much margin do I get either side to have to get this right?
$5,
$10?
$10, yes.
Okay. Do you know what? $100.
$100? You're spot on. Lucky guess, of course, because you'd been saying $100 to everything.
Well, it's the same way that I play University Challenge. You know, when they put a golf question up, it's the answer to all three of them is going to be Greg Norman, and one of them you're going to get 5 points from.
A-level anatomy exam, the liver.
I actually really scared Martin Haven the other day because he'd been bemoaning the fact that University Challenge was getting too hard for him. And,
really? I think it's getting too easy.
Well, he was saying there's too many very specific questions, and he was saying, and I was saying, but yes, but there's people there with specific knowledge. That's the whole point, because they're at university. And he said something about what was the cosine of this and the sine of that. If you added them together, what did they come to? And I stood there and just paused for a moment and went, one?
And he went, yes, how did you know that? I went, well, it's either one or naught. It always is either one or naught. There's only two answers. And he went, oh, just for a moment there, I thought you actually knew what it was. So that's the same thing in answering $100 for all of this. There's a series, in fairness, I think I have seen something about this, although not about the specific stuff, but there's a serious side to auctioning this concrete off, isn't there?
Yes, it will benefit the Bristol chapter of Speedway Children's Charities. And if you want to place an order, go to www.gospeedwayworld.com or visit the Bristol Motor Speedway souvenir store or any Speedway souvenir stand during race week, that's easy for me to say, between August the 22nd and 25th this year.
Hang on a second.
Can we go to Bristol in August?
Bristol. Probably Bristol on Avon, but not Bristol.
No, I'd like to go to Bristol, Tennessee.
That's just reverse of it. Personalise your own screen. Oh, BMS Concrete Collectibles available in July. Here we go. In the acrylic. You see, in the acrylic case, quite nice. 3.5 by 3.25 by 2.5.
Well, that's quite very small, nice, though, isn't it? It's pocket
size. Be nice on your desk. That'd be nice on your desk.
You could put it in the desk, yes.
The frame, it's got a picture of a night race taken from right at the top with a proper. Validating, looks like some kind of plaque and a bit of concrete. Now, the concrete showpiece, in fact, although the concrete is a bit bigger than the framed version, the whole frame is only 11 by 7.5, and it's just got the Bristol logo and the shape of the track around it, frankly. Right. I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that.
It just belts on the bottom to stop it scratching your table.
It does. No, it's in a frame.
Oh, it's in a frame.
But it's not as big a frame. Apparently, quantities from the actual start and finish line are limited, and only actual concrete raced on by Bristol race winners and drivers will be used. After it's gone, there will be no more. So only actual concrete, not virtual concrete,
yes,
clearly.
Subject to status written valuations on request.
Oh, hello. Have we got a Harvick report tonight?
Yeah.
We must have.
I don't know where I've put it, though. Is it? As determined by race fans, Kevin Harvick is the winner of this week's Goodies Headache of the Race Awards.
Well, I'm not surprised he was nearly killed in the car.
He was forced to pit with what they described as a fuel pump issue.
No. The car was full of noxious fumes.
Yes.
Was it not?
They obviously weren't being pumped away by the fuel pump.
Or anything else, in fact. Now, can I just bring your attention, Mr. Greer, that this is a car, the car of tomorrow, which, by the way, one of my American colleagues at St. Petersburg brought me a picture that was from a local paper, and the caption writer obviously had a field day on this. The car of tomorrow at Bristol yesterday. Fantastic. The car of tomorrow has been 7 years in the designing, and all it managed to do in its first race was nearly asphyxiate Kevin Harvick.
That was the second race, to be fair.
Okay, second race, sorry. Clearly they've developed it since the first race because they're trying to weed out the weakest so they can get new people in the NASCAR Nextel Cup. And it burned somebody's feet as well, didn't it?
Yes. But then you've had your feet burnt in the car, haven't you?
Yes, but mine was a car that had been standing around for 15 years and not moved, and the guys were desperately trying to get it on the track so that I could just compete.
15 years in development, John. 15 years in development.
And I won my class with it as well, with me burnt, oily feet. I'm sorry, it's pathetic. NASCAR, go away. Go back to the drawing board. The car of tomorrow does not have a carburettor. The car of tomorrow does not have a solid rear axle. For goodness sake, wake up and smell the coffee. And you can't call it the car of tomorrow anyway, because now it's the car of last week.
The car of tomorrow, of course, is the Toyota Prius.
Don't kid yourself on that one either. That was Midweek Motor Sport for this week. I'm John Hindorf in Wellingborough.
I'm Tim Gray in Norwich.
And next week, more of the same. Don't forget the podcast, and we'll keep those emails coming, if you don't mind, studio@0157.org. Thank you for them all tonight. And a very quick, a final email from Lane Cheryl Purry before we leave us.
We've got time for that.
Yes, we have. According to the LMS site, following up, it will be Michael Peterson, Tim Bergmeister and Dirk Muller will be filling for Thomas Enger in the next couple of races. Thank you very much for looking that up for us, Lynn, Cheryl, Perry.
Any update on our train listening?
That would be William Leach. No, I think he may have got to his destination. Although on Virgin, you can never be sure, frankly. That's it from Tim Gray in Norwich and John Hindhoff in Wellingborough. For Midweek Motorsport and all our guests, bye for now.